When Richard Holbrooke died suddenly in December 2010, his wife, Cathy Martin, was drawn back to Paris, the city where the couple fell in love. So she's called her new memoir, Paris, A Love Story. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Cathy Martin back to our show. Hello.
Hi, it's great to be back with you. Thanks.
You received thousands of letters sharing memories of your husband in the months after he died. Did you learn anything about Richard that you hadn't known before?
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, I knew he was a busy man all the 17 years I spent with him. I certainly knew that, but I didn't realize that he had such a range of friendships. There wasn't a region in the world that I didn't hear from. And some of the letters were from people who you know, were writing on torn bits of paper as if they wanted to make permanent an interaction that they knew would not be repeated. And then there were the more predictable ones from crowned heads and who were, you know, of a writing also for history. But it was I sat on the floor of our living room and for just weeks just read and wept and tried to answer as many of them as I possibly could. It was astonishing.
When Hillary Clinton called to tell you Mark Grossman would replace Richard as the White House's special advisor on Pakistan and Afghanistan, she said that the White House now realized what Richard had been trying to do.
Yeah.
Had they no idea before that?
I guess better late than never. You know, it was Richard and Leonard, this book, as you know, is not uniquely about Richard. It's my memoir, but certainly Richard played such a big role in my life.
In fact, it's kind of a warts and all thing, in which
is.
You also reveal affairs, temper tantrums, abortions.
Singular.
Abortion.
Well, let me just say that it's not worth writing a memoir if you're not going to be honest. The reader smells that right off the bat. This is not a tell-all, but it's certainly a very honest and intimate account, including of Richard and of myself and the
previous husband.
The father of my children, Peter Jennings, to whom I was married for 15 years. You know, these men were public men, but they're very human, too. They're not made of marble. And I think that makes them more interesting and, in fact, more lovable. And God knows I'm no paragon of virtue. I've tried to live a good life, but I don't set myself up as you know, as a model of perfection either.
Why did you decide to move to Paris after Richard died?
Because I was in the deepest possible grief and shock. Our apartment in New York was way too full of ghosts, and I found that I couldn't get on with my life here. And Paris was, as you noted, where Richard and I happened, where we fell in love. But long before that, Paris is the city where I became who I am as a young girl.
In fact, you're right that when you saw Paris for the first time as a student in 1967, it felt like a homecoming, even though you had been born in Hungary, your family fled there, and you were raised in the United States. So what was it about Paris that resonated in that way?
Well, as you know, because I wrote about this in Enemies of the People, my last book, my childhood in Budapest was interrupted very brutally by the arrest of my parents. And after that, things were never the same, and then we fled the following year. And in those days, you couldn't go to late 60s, we're talking about. You couldn't go to Hungary. It was behind the Iron Curtain. And Paris was Europe, and Paris was only a couple of hours from my hometown of Budapest. And everything seemed familiar. And it was a very powerful connection for me.
And then there were, you'd fled after the Hungarian uprisings.
Yes.
You were in Paris in 68 when the student uprising,
as luck would have it,
Jour de Maille, took place. So did it bring back childhood memories?
Yes. I kind of freaked during the uprising in the neighborhood I lived in Paris, in the Latin Quarter. I did not think that the students demonstrating with red banners and turning my neighborhood into a war zone, building barricades, I didn't think that was revolutionary theater. To me, it brought back violent memories of people getting shot, and so I ditched Paris then. In fright.
Well, in an odd way, they were calling for a something like what you had fled Hungary, but also you say you left with the idea, with an understanding that you'd be back
yes.
when things settled down.
Yes, and so I was. 10 years later, I came back as a foreign correspondent for ABC News, and that's when I encountered Peter Jennings, and we had this very tempestuous love affair, which ended in marriage and children.
And your readers may be surprised by how he comes across in this book sometimes. I found him one of the most pleasant people in the world, but he's moody, difficult, had tremendous insecurities.
Well, you know, what I said earlier, that we're all made of the same human stuff. And Peter was a man of many contradictions, and despite his stratospheric success, he was very insecure. He never finished high school, and he felt that in some ways he would be unmasked as a fraud. And also he was in the most competitive business on the planet, you know, being the anchor of ABC News. And so we kind of lived from ratings to ratings. There was always one coming. And the insecurities manifested themselves at home in unpleasant ways. He's the father of my children and a man I loved deeply. And I wanted to give a full portrait, an intimate portrait, as I do of Richard, but I'm not raising a statue here.
He'd asked you out in London, courted you in Germany. Did you spend much time in Paris?
We did, yes. We covered that was the best of our time together was in Paris. I mean, how can you be in Paris and not have a good time and not have a romantic time?
But I know from my own experience, yeah. I've been to Paris and other yeah. places I love, but especially Paris, with different people, and your experience of a city definitely differs depending on the person you're with.
Absolutely.
Or whether you're alone.
Yes. Absolutely. Now I'm in Paris by myself, and it's quite a different experience.
But there's a left bank and the right bank decision that you had to make.
Yes. Well, with Peter, we had a right bank life centered around the Champs-Élysées and some of the more glittering places up and down that avenue, but it was full of tension because we were both correspondents, and one of us was always coming and the other was always leaving, and we were madly in love, but also needy and ambitious.
And you were both at ABC at that time. This is before you
That's
came
right.
to NPR.
Right.
Would it have been better if you'd been at CBS?
Probably not. You know, I eventually left ABC partly because I found it, once we had kids, I just found that it was too toxic an environment to have two people always taking off on a story. So I decided to try my hand at writing, and I'm happy to report that was 8 books ago.
Cathy Martin's latest book is another memoir called Paris, A Love Story. You and Peter were in the middle of separating when you spent the Christmas of 1993 in Paris. And while you were there, you received an unexpected call from Richard Holbrook.
Yes.
Why had he called you?
Well, you know, it turned out that Richard, being an extremely smart observer, he figured that my marriage to Peter would not last. I mean, it did last for 15 years, but Richard
He was willing to wait?
He didn't check into a monastery while he was waiting. He was living a pretty full life. But yes, he was waiting. It turned out that he had fixed on me as the right partner for him. And when he kind of rescued me from a very miserable Christmas in Paris, where I was basically fleeing an unhappy and unraveling marriage, and Richard drove his huge armored Buick, the ambassadorial Buick, from Berlin to Paris, and said, "Okay, Cathy, what's your favorite part of France? Let's go." By the way, we'd been friends, but only friends in New York, and I was unhappy enough so that I took a chance and jumped into that Buick, and my life was changed thereby.
You visited the castles of the Loire Valley.
Yes.
Richard told you that you were different in France than in the United States, and you thought the same of him.
Yes.
Why do you think that?
I very much doubt I would have fallen in love with Richard Holbrooke in New York or Washington, because I saw him as just, this very obviously hyper-intelligent but driven person. And in Paris, I saw a sentimental, romantic, very warm, very engaged in culture and history. I learned so much from him as we drove around on that weepy trip for me, because I was leaving my marriage of 15 years, and I was in quite a state. But he didn't seem to mind at all.
You also say that you began to follow the news differently with Richard than you had with Peter.
Well, you know, for the 17 years I spent with Richard, I was in the middle of history, it felt like. It was a giant history lesson, because he was always engaged in the...
And did he talk to you about, I had a meeting with
this
man, he's very important, but I think he's crazy, stuff like that?
Well, yes. I'm not going to give names of who we thought were crazy, but it was a long distance courtship, because he went back. He was ambassador in Germany, but we talked for about 2 hours every night, and there was never a better talker than Richard Holbrooke.
Did you follow the news differently when you were at ABC and NPR?
I was a journalist then, and I was the daughter of journalists, and journalists are always bearing witness, and in a sense, with their noses pressed against the window. Now I was inside, and I was seeing how an actual policymaker, newsmaker, feels about the news, and how, you know, it was so exciting to be with Richard while he was negotiating the Bosnian peace accords.
Well, there's always tension within a marriage. Was he as good a diplomat within the marriage as he was when he was working for the government?
You know what? Better even. He was at a stage in his life where he was determined that our couple, our marriage would work, and knew that we were the pair of us neither of us shrinking violets, pussycats, but he had he would always cut short any argument by saying, "Look at Kati, we both know where we want this to come out, so can we just get there right away? Because this is, you know, I don't like this." And, you know, how can you argue with a person who tells you that this is silly, let's cut to the chase?
But despite that wonderful relationship, you reveal you went off once and had an affair in Budapest, Hungary.
Well, yes, it isn't only men who misbehave. From time to time, women also misbehave, and I did. Our marriage after 10 years was on automatic pilot. Richard had thrown himself into the Democratic nominee's camp, John Kerry's presidential campaign, and I was at the time, Leonard, digging into my own history, doing a lot of work in Budapest in writing Enemies of the People, and he was not part of that, and so we became best friends. And so the door was ajar for someone to walk in. But of course, Richard was my best friend, so I couldn't keep that from him.
Interestingly, you got married in Budapest, not in Paris.
Yes, well, you know, to marry in Budapest was kind of a healing thing for me, because I had had a very traumatic childhood in Budapest, and it was closing of a circle in a sense, getting married there. And it was my childhood fantasy to marry, particularly in that location. It was the garden of the American embassy where my parents, as journalists, had parked my sister and me when they were doing whatever reporters did.
And then when you were reporting from Budapest in 1978 for ABC, it was the first time a major network had covered Hungary since your parents were abducted and imprisoned for their reporting on the Hungarian Revolution. And there you were, standing in front of your childhood home in the same spot where your father had been abducted. and reporting that to millions of people around the world.
It was an astonishing moment. I've lived an adventuresome life. I'm luckily with lots of bumps in the road too. But that was one of the key moments for me was because I knew that my parents were watching and from the safety of their Washington home, and that they had survived not one but two of the worst experiments in government. They had survived the Nazis and the communists, and that their daughter was back in their hometown representing an American network.
Rich's unexpected death may have sent you back to Paris, but as you mentioned earlier, this memoir is also largely your story. You write about your marriage, I Am Love, Therefore I Am, That Was Me, Now Who Am I? So did you find yourself when you went back to Paris?
I hate the word closure. There's no such thing. Grief is something that you have to assimilate and live with. I will never be the same person. I will never not miss Richard. And to a certain extent, the father of my children, too, who when he was very ill 6 years ago, we came together so his children and I talk of him and miss him a lot. So I can't say that I'm over it. No, I'll never be over it. But this is a book about life after loss. I didn't want to go into a fetal position after Richard's death because I've never wanted to hold on to life more tightly than after his death.
Well, you say that you appreciate the French need for privacy. That's another reason. But then you write this book, which is very unprivate. And haven't you largely moved back to New York?
Yes. Paris is a very important part of my life because, well, my sister lives there, my nephews live there, and now and Richard and I, in the last 2 years when he was mostly in Afghanistan and Pakistan, that Paris was where we would meet, and so we have a little place in the Latin Quarter where I began my Parisian life, and but New York is home, but Paris is definitely a place where I feel somehow most connected to the original me.
Well, this is another memoir. You're going to write another one?
No.
You're running out of material.
This was unexpected. This was really provoked by the enormous loss of Richard.
Kati Martin's memoir, Paris, A Love Story, is published by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It's such a pleasure always to be with you.